welcome to the Semiconductor Insiders Podcast Series. The goal of this podcast is to bring semiconductor experts together to get to the truth about the matter at hand. We'll get right to the point and not exceed 30 minutes of your time. If you have a topic you would like us to cover, please post it on semiwiki.com and we'll get right to it. My guest today is Bahin Hamid, Chief Operating Officer and Chief Financial Officer of Brecker Verification Systems. She brings more than 15 years of financial experience in deal structuring and operations management in diverse industries, including wireless telecommunications, clean energy, health, and infrastructure projects in emerging markets. Prior to Brecker, she served in various roles in investment banking and management consulting. Welcome to the podcast, Bahin.
Thank you so much for having me here today.
Yeah, it's nice to speak with you. I know we run around in the same circles, but we haven't actually met yet.
No, we haven't. That needs to change.
For sure. So the first question we usually ask is, how did you find your way into the semiconductor industry? Hopefully you have an interesting story.
I hope it will resonate with many immigrants to the United States. So I was born and brought up in Bangladesh, which is a tiny little country surrounded by India on three sides and the ocean on the fourth side. And it's a relatively young country. We gained our independence in 1991. So my youth actually saw the struggling transformations of the country as we tried to establish basic infrastructure, solidify educational and bureaucratic systems, and other such just foundational systems for a new country. So even my time in investment banking in the 90s were spent in funding huge projects in telecommunications, in infrastructure, roads, bridges, and so on and so forth. So high tech was really not a big focus area for when I was growing up. So the computers, I didn't have access to my first computer until like late 90s, a couple of years before I moved to the States. And so semiconductor industry was not something I knew much about nor understood very well until I married Adnan. And he was already a force in the field of verification. He'd already built his career at AMD, was working at Cadence when we got married. And ours was an arranged marriage. So we saw each other for the first time a week before we got married. We had talked a little bit for a few weeks before then. And a week after wedding, I was here in Austin, Texas, very far removed from the environment I'd grown up in. So no chip background, and here I am in the heart of high tech. Then I did business school, and as I was listening to Adnan's stories about the work he was doing in verification, and in business school I did some competitive strategy projects and the rivalry between Intel and AMD, and the whole space started seeming very interesting and fascinating because of all the technical opportunities it had, as well as the business opportunities it had in terms of crafting strategy and so on and so forth. So after we both finished business school in 2003, when Adnan wanted to start Brecker, it just seemed like such an opportune time. We were young, didn't have kids at the time, and it just seemed like an excellent time to go into business and try this out. And you know, he had an innovative idea, wanted to push the boundaries of verification, how people did things, and just this idea of being able to do something better for humankind was exciting. And that's how I ended up in the chip industry. So short answer to your question is the same answer I give to people when they ask, how did you come to America? Marriage. That's how I ended up here.
So you married into the semiconductor industry.
I did.
That's a good story. So what is the technology sector like in Bangladesh, and how was the transition for you into Silicon Valley? Because Silicon Valley is a very fast-paced environment.
Yeah. So as I already mentioned, you know, when I was growing up, there was no high tech in Bangladesh per se. The major technological innovation that came in was probably in the mid-90s when the cellular telecommunications started taking off. Because prior to then, teleaccess in Bangladesh through landlines was very, very low. And the cellular telecommunications came in and changed that whole paradigm. So now even villagers with no education know how to operate a cell phone. They know how to operate some apps. They may not be on the smartphones as yet, but they at least know how to operate some apps and things to get their financial lives going and so on. So there was a huge inflection point, I think, around the time that I left Bangladesh. So, which was in 2000. And I know that in the last 5 to 10 years, the government has been funding a lot of high-tech investments in Bangladesh. They're really creating a lot of attractive packages for people to invest in Bangladesh in the high-tech space, because there are a lot of incredible, brilliant engineers who come out of Bangladesh and people who wanted to pursue a career in computer engineering to the United States. So there are quite high-placed individuals in several chip companies who've helped grow the ecosystem in Silicon Valley, but who have engineering backgrounds in Bangladesh. So some of these people are now investing back in Bangladesh and taking advantage of these government packages and so on. So high tech is now beginning to come in Bangladesh. There are some design services, consulting houses, and so on and so forth. So in fact, Brecker is currently also looking at an opportunity to build a local team in Bangladesh as well. So from that into Silicon Valley, to answer the second part of the question, so I grew up in an entrepreneurial family. My father was in the telecommunications industry, which I said was from a technological standpoint, was the happening place in Bangladesh at that time. And so just the excitement of being able to do something new for a space that you're going into, I think that's the spirit of Silicon Valley as well, that this idea of innovation, bringing in new ideas and bringing in the bridging between the consumer and the solution space is what makes it unique. And so that transfer of energy was no different from when I came from Bangladesh to Silicon Valley. But coming up to speed on the lingo in high tech, that was the, I would say, the learning curve for me. But I think married to someone who talks about it in his sleep as well, so it's much easier to nowadays to at least be comfortable with what's being said and the solution spaces that can be attractive for investors as well as users.
Right. I tell you, that's an amazing story. What about building your company, Brecker, with your husband? You know, how did that work?
So we were still fairly early in our marriage when we started Brecker. So I would say that much of my married life is with Adnan as husband, as well as my business partner. We both went to business school a year into our marriage, and we started the company as soon as we graduated. So I would say that it works pretty well because we have very different strengths in functional areas as well as personalities. I grew up in Bangladesh in a fairly conservative family. It's a patriarchal society. So we learn different skill sets in how we engage with our peers and elders and so on. Adnan, on the other hand, was raised in a diplomatic family. So he traveled a lot throughout his youth, and he's been out on his own since he was 14, went off to boarding school and then college, and then, you know, built his career in verification. Unlike Adnan, I didn't know at the age of 12 that I had computers. So, you know, those sorts of complementary strengths that he's so driven by the innovation part of it, and I have the knowledge and experience of building out the business systems and being able to communicate with the people around us and the ecosystem around us to help enable building out Brecker. It worked out pretty well, and we trust each other's capabilities very well. So that works out to our advantage, actually. And as I say, you know, Brecker is our first baby. Our daughter was born 2 years after we started Brecker. So it has helped us converge on communication as a couple, as well as business partners. And now it gets even better as Brecker grows and we have more of a team dynamic to nurture and protect and grow. I think it's even more structured and easier for us to separate out the personal from the professional.
Yeah, my wife and I, my wife is a banker by trade, and she has assisted me in starting companies during my career. In fact, SemiWiki, she is the I guess you would call her the chief operations and the chief financial officer, because she manages all the business side. And it really is a 1+1=3 situation with us. We've been together for 40 years, but she has been in the EDA industry with me, you know, since the beginning, in the IP industry. And so she really gets it. And I could not have done it without her. It has been an amazing experience. So anybody that has that opportunity, boy, they're very lucky. So Maheen, you started Brecker in 2003. That's a long time ago. It's, mm-hmm. it's almost 20 years now. What still excites you about Brecker and EDA?
So I think EDA has always felt to me that it was underrated, and I'm really, really happy to see that it's beginning to get its moment in everybody's spotlight, and people are beginning to understand how much technology EDA has enabled over the decades and will continue to do so. So that part is always exciting, and I'm excited to be part of the ESDA Governing Council and helping to shape that messaging and rally the industry towards that as well. For Brecker, it really has been an incredible ride. I mean, I think we came to market with a very innovative product at the time, which didn't necessarily resonate with every customer. So it was the classic crossing the chasm, where there were a lot of early adopters who understood and saw the potential of the technology and helped us build it out. And so we've gone through many phases of Brecker over time. And what's been exciting to me is that, given that we took a very user-driven approach, our solution is very agile and very complete in that it can meet so many different needs of the complex challenges that the users are working on. And different companies, big companies, have very different kind of very high-end technical challenges. And it's always exciting to me to see Brecker being able to step up to that challenge and deliver, even though there's a lot of market competition, there's a lot of pollution in the market messaging. And in spite of all of that, Brecker has been able to stand the test of time. And I now see the last 2 to 3 years as a convergence from the users on truly understanding the value of what Brecker can bring for them and what it can do for them company-wide as a methodology, as well as a specific monolithic solution for certain complex problems. So I think in recent times, it really has been exciting to come to work every day and just listen from our team, from the various stakeholders, as to what they're finding cool about the technology and why it sets us apart from what's already out there.
Yeah, I agree. We've been working with Brecker since 2019, and mm-hmm. it really has been an exciting transition. And, you know, I've been in EDA for close to 40 years, and mm-hmm. I don't think there's been a better time to be in EDA than there is today. I mean, we are recognized as leaders in the semiconductor industry and the technology industry and key enablers. You know, it's mm-hmm. a long time coming.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Absolutely agree.
Yeah. So let's change subjects a little bit. Do you have a female role model in Bangladesh? You know, did you have any type of role model change for you once you built your career in the U.S.?
Yes, I think so. So in Bangladesh, as I said, you know, it was a relatively new entrepreneurial environment, and not many women actually entered the workforce in the early 80s or so. That started to change from the late 80s, when ready-made garments became a huge industry in Bangladesh. And that actually welcomed a large female workforce into the city who came from villages and outer areas. So you started to see a lot of girls and women in professional spaces. On the higher end, typically women who came from relatively well-to-do families, middle to upper class families, either took the helm of family businesses and so on, but very few actually started something on their own as an entrepreneur and built it out on their own in the 80s and 90s. But one such woman was an aunt of mine and my father's first cousin, and she built it in the fashion space. But what I really admired was just her confidence in going out there and sticking to her guns, bringing innovative ideas in the spaces of landscaping, you know, event design and planning and the fashion area, and she's still innovating. So growing up, I did seek out a lot of time with her just because I was inspired by her. When I moved to the US, as I said, I went to UT Austin for my MBA a year after. As it turned out, I was the youngest in my class at the time. And what changed for me was that I met so many women who came and gave talks to the school, CEO of Priceline, CEO of other companies like Amy's Ice Cream, which is a local ice cream chain in Austin. And, you know, just a different whole gamut of women who have gone through so many different experiences, very different infrastructure that helped build themselves up, you know, from education to family support to the opportunities they could avail. And that shifted the worldview for me, that you know, it didn't have to be something that only women could do. It could be in fields like technology where women could come in and also exercise their strengths. And so over time I started, there's no one person who inspires me today. It's like I tried to take the best from anyone who builds something that I don't already have. So in recent times, then I have really admired Lisa Su of AMD. Because just the way she came in, she really demonstrated that it's good leadership. It doesn't matter gender, it doesn't matter your background necessarily, but the fact that you can come in with charisma and you can change a business that has potential. So I would say that, you know, that's how my transition from, you know, what I looked up to back in Bangladesh versus what I look up to today has shifted, evolved, and transformed over time.
That's an interesting story. Yeah, you know, for me in Silicon Valley, it was fairly easy because there were so many role models when I was growing up. You know, I got out of college in the early 80s and, you know, I got to meet Andy Grove and Bill Gates and Steve Jobs just, you know, through conferences and such. And there were so many role models, but not really female, because we were, you know, really a male dominant industry. And in fact, when I started SemiWiki, we have readership numbers and only 1% of our readers were female. And now it's 15, you know, to 20%. It's amazing. And I agree with you, Lisa Su. Wow. What an inspirational CEO, you know,
truly.
It's just truly. And there are many others, of course, but, you know, we all have role models and it's just nice that there is a much different, you know, variation of role models in the semiconductor industry now than when I started.
Absolutely. And I what I love is that it's not just limited to technology disciplines. You know, you now have in the business disciplines as well, where you don't necessarily need to have a technical background, which I don't. I didn't go to engineering school. I focused on economics and finance and entrepreneurship. And but it's limitless as to what you can do. And there are really some really fun things that you can do in the chip industry today.
Yeah, it's amazing. A lot of our leaders have PhDs. You know, I also have an engineering bachelor's, and then I have a master's in business and business law. And, you know, so I transitioned halfway through my career. But some of the most amazing leaders, they have PhDs. And it's just amazing that they have both the technical acumen and the business acumen to run, you know, a major corporation.
Yes, absolutely.
So let's get down to really the reason why I wanted to talk to you. It's how does it feel to be selected as one of the 100 most influential women in Silicon Valley? That's a very big honor.
It is a great honor, and I'm just humbled beyond belief. And again, I will tell you a story, which I think illustrates why we should never limit ourselves, even with our own imaginations. So when I was going to, as I told you earlier, I didn't really have access to my first computer until in the late 90s, a couple of years before I came here. And so it was in my undergrad, I was going to this small private college in Bangladesh, and in my first semester, I had to write an English paper, and it was required that it had to be a computer-generated printout. So I found a computer in my dad's office. I stayed up all night writing it, and when at the end of my paper, I'd finished writing it, I read through it multiple times, did all the autocorrects and everything. It said, "Do you want to save changes?" And I said, "No, I'm done." I took my printout, and I said, "No." So I never saved the file. So I come to school with my one printout. And then a friend of mine who I knew was good at coding, and he wanted to study computer science. He asked, well, she asked for two copies. Do you have a second copy? I'm like, no. He's like, well, do you have a soft copy? And I have no idea what a soft copy is, right? And he's like, okay, no, let's go photocopy this one and that'll work. And that was in 96. And here I am today in this incredible group of women in Silicon Valley, right? And to me, it just feels like a dream come true that, you know, you don't limit yourself. We are always told to walk a certain line because we're women and we're this, and you have to be a mom first or what have you. There's so many limitations that are perceived or even fed to us. And we have to just believe in ourselves and keep going. And that's, I think those are the things that I hold dear, that I didn't let that experience cripple me when it became an opportunity for me to start an EDA company. I didn't let my lack of knowledge in EDA cripple me. I learned as I went along, I talked to a lot of people. And you know, today I have several positions of honor that just truly humbles me because of my roots.
Yeah, that's an amazing story. You know, when I grew up, my father was an Air Force pilot, so he's a very, you know, strong, disciplined man. But my mother was a designer for NASA. She worked on the Apollo space program. And
wow.
I remember her frustration with, she, you know, there was a glass ceiling for women. This was back in the 60s and 70s.
Mm-hmm.
But she was so inspirational because she just kept going and going, and an amazing woman. So my brothers and I are very lucky. I only have brothers, so my mm-hmm. mother, you know, raised a bunch of boys. But we had so much inspiration, and most of us are in technology, you know. And I think that's why, is because of my mother. My father discouraged us from going in the military. So he said, no, go into engineering, you know, build something. And so. So we're very fortunate. And I think today the kids are also fortunate because, you know, both the parents are working usually, and they're both doing, you know, hopefully inspirational work. So,
yeah. And I think you also need to be creative about where you draw inspiration. My mom did not study beyond high school. And you know, she got married when she was 19, had her first child when she was 20. And since then, she had been mostly a housewife. And then in 1993, driven by a personal loss, she and my dad, they started a foundation for childhood cancer in Bangladesh. And it was the very first nonprofit in our country that served that particular demographic. And over time, she's grown it into a center of excellence in South Asia for pediatric oncology, right? And again, I mean, she inspires me. She didn't go through the education per se, but it was in her skill sets, in her drive, in her resilience that she was still able to go and build something meaningful for society and our community. So it doesn't have to be in the field of technology. Whatever field you choose, be your best. And I think, you know, you will find your own validation in what you're doing.
So this is a good time to conclude the podcast. Do you have any, you know, additional things you would like to say?
Once again, Dan, thank you very much for having me on this podcast. This form factor is the first one for me, so I'm glad I got to do it with someone who's already has so much experience running it. Thank you for the faith and the support you've shown to Brecker over time. It is an exciting company going into exciting times, and we look forward to doing more together.
Thank you very much, Ahmed. I appreciate it. This is the end of our podcast. Thank you all again for participating in the Semiconductor Insiders podcast series, and we'll see you again next week.
Thank you.
That concludes our podcast. Thank you all for listening, and have a great day.